steaming hot. Sweat soaked through our dark clothes. We carried our tools and gear in nylon backpacks. I held a long, heavy metal flashlight. Clipped to my pocket was a 4-inch gravity knife serving as a utility tool. The flashlight was more an emergency weapon than a source of light. It looked better than carrying a club. I was more concerned about stray dogs, muggers, and incorrect or incomplete operational intelligence about the site than I was about a hostile intelligence service, for which a club or knife would be nearly useless. For illumination, I carried a penlight ready in my pocket. There was sufficient ambient light for us going up the stairs. My partner from the Office of Technical Services, OTS, had executed dozens of black bag jobs. He was calm, even relaxed. This was my first surreptitious entry. I was concerned about being discovered, but more worried about doing something dumb. A good case officer knows his strengths and weaknesses. I knew that my technical ineptitude was like infinity, endless. My role, however, was to handle any unexpected intervention or change in plan. I knew the site and the environment. I was responsible for the operation. My partner, who had flown into town days earlier, would handle all the technical requirements. OTS included some of the bravest officers in the CIA. They traveled all over the world. They clandestinely breached embassies, offices, homes, labs, and terrorist safe sites to install listening devices. They also bugged phones, rigged hidden cameras, and could fabricate just about anything an operations officer needed, from a concealment device to a specialized transmitter to a disguise. My partner managed the lock on the apartment door in seconds, and we were inside. Our source had assured us that the apartment would not be occupied that night, but we waited and listened. We could hear the traffic below and beyond, stretching into the African night and fading to an unseen horizon. The room was quiet. Every tiny noise we made seemed magnified by the dark stillness. The dim city lights filtered through the half-closed drapes. It was even hotter inside the apartment, closed and on an upper floor. The sweat poured. I led the way, easing around one side of the dark residence. The place smelled of cat piss, but there was no cat. Our source had not mentioned a cat, just that the occupants would be gone. They had apparently taken their cat with them. Or maybe it was hiding in a closet waiting to pounce. Or maybe it was dead under the couch. I wondered if my allergies, especially acute with cats, would ignite an explosion of sneezes. I breathed through my mouth. The technical officer and I were on our knees. We eased onto our bellies and slunk across the floor, staying below the windowsill, working to reach and maneuver where needed. I was thankful that my technical task was limited to holding the penlight and keeping the pinpoint beam on target. My partner worked smoothly, silently. He pried and clipped and bound the wires. He made sure the concealment host was perfect. There could be no signs of tampering. Finished. It had taken about 10 minutes total. Now we needed to clear the apartment and the building. We double-checked the floor. One staple, a bit of fabric. I picked them up. There was my sweat. Off our bellies and back on our hands and knees, moving toward the exit, and I was dripping all over the floor. Would it dry in noticeable little splotches? The tech pointed at the sweat spots and gave me a whiskey tango foxtrot stare. Even in the shifting shadows, I could see his expression. I could feel it. Still on my hands and knees and still breathing through my mouth, I swung my ass around, pointed it to the door, and crawled in reverse while wiping my sweat from the floor with my bandana. I had never imagined such an undignified exit. Meanwhile, outside on the street, my counter-surveillance partner had encountered a roving policeman approaching the apartment. My enterprising colleague, with whom I shared an office, engaged the patrolman in a long conversation, reinforced with shots from a bottle of liquor that he had conveniently stowed in his pocket. They talked about the quality of booze and women. My case officer friend kept the cop distracted while we slipped out of the apartment compound. I didn't know about this averted disaster until the next morning. We had launched the operation 6 months earlier to capture the target's conversations. During that time, we never acquired a single intelligence report or any other useful information. It was a waste of time, effort, and risk. Our entry, therefore, was for one purpose only: to recover the listening device as the last step in closing the operation. The target had been good, too disciplined. He had valuable intelligence, but he never talked about anything of importance to any of his visitors. He was a disciplined professional. Our foreign agents who supported this operation had covered the physical aspects of the building and the access. The original entry, counter-surveillance, technical implant, transmission, listening post, and transcriber's translators were solid. So was the operational act to extract our bug. By some measures, this was a good operation, if you ignored the lack of intelligence. But that, of course, was the entire reason for the operation: to acquire quality intelligence to serve our customers. We had failed to study the target sufficiently to weigh the chances of his revealing any information. We had simply assumed and hoped that he would talk to his spouse or to guests in his apartment. Hindsight is easy. In retrospect, the lesson is clear. Never underestimate the human factor. It's the most important part of clandestine operations, more important than the technology. Why had we not determined that the chances of operational success were so low? How could we have made that determination? In what ways could we have studied the target to measure his self-discipline? While we never expected the crown jewels of intelligence to be revealed, we had surmised that he would talk and we would collect something of value, including assessment information about the target. With that in hand, we could have crafted a recruitment approach to him, or we could have learned about other recruitment targets. But he did not gossip. He hardly even talked. There were the other human factors. Who knew the cop's patrol pattern, if there was one? Who knew the cop would enjoy the booze? Who knew the owner had a cat? Had we even thought to find out? How well had we vetted the asset who informed us that the target was away from home? Why had I carried a bandana, with no idea it would serve as a sweat mop? In every future audio operation, I would study the target's propensity for gab. I would consult with our psychologists for their assessments. It was dumb to take risks without better understanding the odds of success. Among many other things, I would always study the roots of local law enforcement, inquire about animals, and carry a bandana. Our instructors at the farm taught us technical collection disciplines: signals intelligence, SIGINT, imagery intelligence, IMINT, and measurement and signature intelligence, MASINT. Later, with the explosion of digital information, open source intelligence, OSINT, gained a larger role. These technical collection disciplines and human intelligence, HUMINT, are symbiotic. In all the examples of recruitment operations in the previous chapter, intelligence derived from technical collection helped guide me in the original assessment, recruitment, validation, and tasking of the agents. My HUMINT operations invariably benefited, to varying degrees, from telephone and telex intercepts, cyber penetrations, audio devices, beacons, satellite imagery, sensors, and unmanned aerial vehicles. And my technical operations almost always depended on HUMINT at some level. My first surreptitious entry would not have been possible without an agent's key information. My egress from that target site might have ended in disaster without my fellow officer's counter-surveillance intervention. HUMINT informs and enables technical operations, and vice versa. Intelligence collection requires much more than recruiting and running a productive source, but in my early years that was almost always the path to collection success, even in the technical arena. Sources provided access, even if only proximity, for technical exploitation. When technical and human source collectors support each other, exploitation value soars. The following examples illustrate how the synergy of Humint and technical collection benefited the CIA's intelligence customers. Foreign leadership assessments. U.S. leaders have an insatiable appetite for knowledge about their foreign counterparts. They want to know their policies and also their personalities. They want to understand their character. The CIA devotes substantial time and effort to servicing this requirement. Foreign leaders enjoy big, fancy hotel suites. That comes with the job, with the expectations of rank and protocol.